All about her Veronica could hear the drip of moisture, little wandering eddies of draft blew in all directions, and the whisper of innumerable streamlets sounded in the darkness. The sudden stillness after the din of the storm left a singing in the ears. The cessation of the lightning gave the eyes a chance to become accustomed to the darkness and use what half-light came from the waning moon. Veronica hastened down the sodden path, going knee-deep into the channels of new-formed streams, pushed through the sodden shrubbery, and mounted the steps from the lawn, just as Dr. Latimer stepped out onto the terrace to come in search of her. A banishing ritual had evidently been done in the billiard room of the old house, for the altar had been dismantled of its symbols and the lamp extinguished. The body of Lucas lay upon the long sofa beside the fire. The grave clothes had been replaced by one of the black robes worn by the brethren of the fraternity, the stains of the soil were removed, and the black hair, that had grown long and shaggy, had been roughly cut and smoothed. There was nothing in his appearance to shock her, except that the eyes were deeply sunken, giving an indefinably death-like look to the face. Otherwise he might have been lying there asleep. The third, was still in his sodden robes, stood beside the window, evidently awaiting her arrival. "Go quickly," he said, "and change into dry clothes. We have none too long for the resuscitation, it must be completed before cockcrow. Now hurry." Veronica needed no second bidding. She fled up to her room and hastily changed her dripping garments and was back in the billiard room before the fumbling fingers of old Dr. Latimer had completed his toilette. The third still stood beside the inanimate form of Lucas, and as she came timidly up to the couch, he put his arm around her and drew her towards the body of the dead man he had told her she must marry. Together they stood looking down into the mask-like face with its sunken eyes. Veronica was too dazed and numb to know what she felt towards the man who lay before her. The fact that corruption had not touched him convinced her that it would be even as the third had said, and that Lucas was in a deep trance and capable of resurrection. All thoughts of his death and burial was obliterated from her mind. She thought of him as an unconscious man who would shortly recover consciousness, and with whose strange and sinister temperament she would once again have to contend. She remembered all he had been to her and all he had done to her, and if it had not been for the arm of the strange master of men, adept, saint, or sorcerer, whatever he might be, that held her so securely, she felt that, like Ahab, she would have turned her face to the wall and yielded up her spirit. But in him she felt an absolute trust. She knew that it was he who would cope with Lucas, though he had to depend upon her as the instrument of his purpose, and she knew that she would not fail him. Whether her love or her horror of Justin were the greater, she could not have said even to herself, but the mysterious adept absolutely dominated her, not because he controlled her, but because he inspired her. The old man joined them, and the third bade him sit at the far side of the hearth while he placed Veronica at the foot of the couch so that her face would be the first thing the dead man should see when he opened his eyes. Then, bending over the inanimate body, he made the same passes that a hypnotist makes when he recalls his subject to consciousness. He had not long to wait. At the third or fourth stroke a shudder ran through the form of Lucas and he tried to move, but subsided again. Life had not yet reanimated the tissues, it was a mere galvanism of the nerves that followed the movements of the magnetizer's hand. The third placed his open palm upon the chest of the dead man and slowly raised it up and down. After a moment or two the chest followed the movements and breathing was restored. It was soon obvious that the heart had also taken up its beat, for the face was losing its waxen appearance and assuming a more normal tint, though still bleached like the skin of one who has long been in the dark. The third turned to Veronica. "Speak to him," he said. "Call him by name. Make him come back." Veronica bent over the foot of the couch. "Justin," she said softly, "Justin." A quaver passed over the face of the recumbent man. He stirred stiffly, as if with limbs numbed and cramped, and slowly rose to a sitting position, but his face was still that of a sleeper and the eyes remained closed. She came to the side of the couch and took Lucas's hands in hers. They were cold with the coldness of a serpent, And as she held them, the snake-like fingers slowly closed round hers and gripped them. The man who was called the Third came behind Lucas and placed his palms on either side of his head. "Lucas," he said in deep vibrant tones like the low notes of a cello. The lips of the mask-like face slowly unclosed and a husky murmur came from between them. "Do you know who I am?" said the voice of the man who bent over him. A faint nod responded. The Third let go his hold on Lucas's head, straightened himself, and resting his elbow on the chimney piece, stood waiting for him to regain full consciousness. The expressionless face, like some carved effigy on a tomb, was gradually losing its ghastly pallor as the slow-moving blood began to circulate through the veins. The deathly coldness was passing out of the hands that Veronica held, and it was obvious that moment by moment Lucas was returning to life. He seemed suddenly to become aware of the hands that held his, and shifting his grip on them as if to feel their texture. "Is that Veronica?" he said. Veronica could not speak, but her hands quivered in his, and he bent forward and slowly raised first one and then the other to his lips, and then sank back upon the cushions. For a long time there was silence, Veronica half kneeling, half crouching beside the couch and Lucas lying motionless as if dead, but with a difference. Something about him had indefinably changed. He was obviously a man who was neither asleep nor dead, but resting. Only his face, with its unopened, sunken eyes, still looked death-like. Finally he spoke again. "What has become of the man who was here when I first woke?" "He is still here," said Veronica.
"Where?"
"Over there, by the fireplace," replied Veronica. Lucas slowly turned his head. "I can't see in this pitch darkness," he said. "Can't you strike a light?" Veronica, nonplussed, did not know what to reply. The soft warm radiance of the lamp fell full on his face and the room was brightly lit. The Third crossed the hearthrug towards them, and taking Lucas's head in his hands again, turned his face full to the light and gently lifted first one and then the other of the eyelids, revealing empty sockets. He and Dr. Latimer looked at each other. "Removed at the post-mortem," said the Third. Lucas swung his feet off the couch and sat upright on its edge. "Is it necessary to be in the dark?" he said. "Can't he anyone strike a light?" The Third laid a hand on his shoulder. "There will be no light for you, my son," he said. No one spoke. Lucas raised his hands to his face and felt the sockets of his eyes hollow under his touch. "Is the room lighted?" he said at length. "Brightly lighted," said the Third. Lucas, his face in his hands, sat for a long time silent. At length he spoke. "I can't complain," he said. "It is just."
"Well done, my son," exclaimed the Third.
All Veronica's horror of Lucas seemed gone with her knowledge of his blindness, and she knelt beside him, anxiously watching his face. He turned his head slowly, from habit, as if looking round.
"Are you there, Veronica?" he said.
"Yes," came her whisper from close beside him. "I am here." He put out his hand towards her, and she put out hers, but he missed it, and touched her head. His hand rested on it for a moment, and then dropped to her shoulders, encircling them. He opened his lips as if to speak, and then paused, thinking. The realization of his blindness was gradually dawning on him, and he knew that he could no longer carry out the scheme he had planned. True, he had evaded death and returned to life, but it was death in life to which he had returned. A chorus of cocks rang out from the distant farms. "My curfew," said Lucas with a smile, and relapsed into silence again. The Third took an elbow off the mantelpiece, and drawing up one of the big leather armchairs, lowered himself into it. "The past is past. Let us consider the future. Have you any plans?"
"None," said Lucas.
"Do with me what you will. But I have many plans, and since you have put yourself into my hands, I will take you at your word. You must take up your work again." Lucas did not answer. The Third continued. "As you know, I have been out of Europe for a good many years now. Too many, I am afraid.
The fraternity sank to its embers till you, my son, tried to rekindle it. Lucas smiled. It certainly showed signs of life in places, he said.
Yes, said the third, you were right. It needed a fresh impulse, but you were not able to do it single-handed. Veronica will be your fitting complement for inner plane work.
Lucas threw up his head like a startled horse, then checked himself. What has Veronica got to say to that? He asked in very level tones.
She gave her consent before we started on this operation.
Lucas's arm tightened round her.
Is that so, Veronica? He whispered. For answer she crept closer to him, and forgetful of the onlookers, he hid his face in her hair. After a moment or two he raised it.
There is one other person I should like to see, he said. A man who was very good to me in the old days.
Dr. Latimer.
I am here, Justin, said the old man.
Lucas put out his hand and for a long time, he sat silent, his arm round Veronica and his hand in the old man's. When at length he raised his face it had a very different expression.
What have I done to deserve a chance? He said.
You have realized your mistake and paid for it without murmuring, replied the man who was known to them as the third.
You have turned again and retraced your steps over the burning coals without flinching.
You have passed your tests, my son, you are back on the path, and the gates stand open before you.
The end.